Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family. Rocket can.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Hey! Don't touch that dial. Don't change that tune. Live and in person coming right here at you. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I am your host extraordinaire, Cole Thompson. 800-224-2004 if you want to call in and have an opinion on the show. We got Michael Hernandez, the greatest producer on the other side of Mississippi, on the other side of the glass. But more importantly, we got a great hour ahead. Game one of the World Series is in the books. What to make of the Braves? What to make of the Astros? We got to talk about NFL. Two coaches make different comments, one positive, one negative, and of course, it is buy or sell, where we talk about the Oklahoma Sooners. We'll get more into that. But I start the show off today with this. Guys, you have got to get an air fryer. If you want to make a smart investment on something in your kitchen, I am telling you today, go buy an air fryer. Yesterday, I was craving wings. I'm trying to save money. My girlfriend, Kirsten, she bought a whole bag of wings. I thawed them out. Throughout the day, I was like, you know what? I don't want to go ahead and use like a bunch of vegetable oil and burn myself. I'm going to try the air fryer. All it took was 20 minutes in the air fryer. I had 25 wings, delicious flavor, great content, smothered in sauce, absolutely came out with fire. This is a game changer, people, because everyone's always like, oh, it's so hard to cook wings. Because if you want to know why, it is. You got to bread them. You got to make sure you got the right seasoning on them. You got to make sure you sauce them right. Sometimes if you're really picky, you got to double fry them. That takes a hot minute. Instead, pop them in an air fryer. Wait, go get some stuff done. Go ahead, do your laundry. Go ahead, go pay your bills, pay your taxes. Do whatever you got to do. And by the time you come back, delicious wings are sitting and waiting for you right at the very top. It just, it goes down very smooth.
I usually make like chicken cutlets in it.
So that's what we've been starting to do, and it's so easy to do. I still like to pan fry my chicken cutlets. I don't know why. I enjoy cooking. That's one of the things I do. But wings are such a nightmare to cook that it's like, you know what? I'm going to be lazy tonight. I'm going to pop them in the air fryer. They were delicious. They were nutritious. And more importantly than anything else, they fed me in fast time. Telling you, you are a big wing guy. If you're somebody out there who likes to have some fried food, go get yourself an air fryer. Game changer.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
1-0 pitch. Hit in the air to deep left field. Spinning around out in left is Bradley, and that one disappears. A two-run home run for Duvall. And it's 5-0 Atlanta here in the top of the third.
That call brought to you by the Atlanta Braves play-by-play right here in Houston, Texas, as Game 1 has come to a close. And we now have a clear indication on these two teams fighting for the Commissioner's Trophy in the 2021 World Series. Let's go ahead and start off with the winners. Atlanta's good. Atlanta is good at baseball. And it's not just that they were able to win certain matchups against great pitching. They weren't just going up against certain teams that felt like incomplete, that felt like they had a little bit of weakness here and there. No, Atlanta's just a good baseball team. And again, this is a big testament to what Alex Anthopoulos did the entire offseason. He got right before the trade deadline permission to go ham. Go ahead, start eating away at the farm system, and rebuild that outfield. Everybody remembers, Ronald Acuna Jr. is a superstar outfielder. Imagine his bat in right field in this lineup, batting number two. Batting number one and number two in the lineup. Imagine that bat. Yeah, it's a scary thought. It's a very scary thought. But again, torn ACL in June, they go ahead and rebuild the outfield. And who do they go get? Let's start off with Jorge Soler. Big name, big power bat in right field, playing a little bit of DH during his time in the Kansas City Royals. He gets traded. What's he do on the very first bat against Framber Valdez? Oh, I don't know. Only misses the entire bit of the NLCS. First swing, gone. 1-0 deep into the Crawford boxes, gets the early lead, really bad off-speed pitch that just hangs over the plate, gets immediately up, gets in, gets out of there. It's such a good pitch. It was an actual really good pitch by Framber Valdez. Just a better swing. Now what happens next? Eddie Rosario. Everyone remember him? The guy who was basically let go by the Minnesota Twins because he was non-tender last year. Comes in, signs a one-year deal, basically league minimum kind of deal, to go out there and play for the likes of play for the likes of the Cleveland Indians. Gets traded in a deal with Pablo Sandoval. Remember that name? Yeah, anybody remember that name? Guy gets cut less than 12 hours after getting traded to the Cleveland Indians. Rosario now is the NLCS MVP. How'd he do last night? Well, he had two hits, and he scored a run. So he's batting 400 in the World Series. Guy like that. Adam Duvall. Guy plays both, can play all three outfield positions. Left, center, right. Really come on strong as a left fielder. You just heard the call. Big two-run homer. Biggest hit of the night. Put the Braves up 5-0. Basically putting the game out of reach. And then you have Jock Peterson, who, guess what? Had a hit. He didn't do great. Didn't do really anything special, but he had a hit. Every single bit of this lineup feels like they can be dangerous at any given moment for Atlanta. Freddie Freeman got a hit. Ozzy Albies got two hits. In fact, every single batter besides, Wilson Heredia, I think that's how you say his last name, who came in and played center field, and Duvall moved to right field for the bottom innings. He had one at bat. Everybody got a hit. Everybody got a hit. They got six runs. They left. They struck out 12 times. They got five players didn't strike out at least once. They left 15 on base, but everybody got a hit. That means that when you're looking at this Braves lineup, they can hit with runners in scoring position. They can go ahead and drive it deep. They can put the ball in play, and they can make the Astros work. One of the biggest differences is that they left Framber Valdez in too long. I'll be the first to say that. When you look at what Dusty Baker is going to regret from game one, it's probably leaving Framber Valdez in for a batter or two too long. At the end, that allowed Duvall to get the big home run. That shifted the momentum because the final score maybe could have been 4-2, not 5-2. Maybe it would have been 3-2. And then at least the Astros lose a close one. Instead, you allow Valdez, who allowed far too many hits. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he allowed eight hits. Eight hits, five earned runs, struck out two, also allowed two big home runs. Now is a 22.5 ERA after 2.5 innings of work. Left him in for probably a batter too long. When you saw him in the third inning go and a single to Rosario. When you watched him come in and do that, to me was when it was like, you know what? Probably should have pulled him at this point. Probably should have taken him out at the start of the third inning. Instead, you leave him in. Guess what? You pay for it. Now, I will say this. The Astros' bullpen, on the flip side, was able to do a very good job of containing the Braves' bats. In fact, once the Braves' bat, once you brought in Yimi Garcia, once you started bringing in, Jake Odorizzi, once you started bringing in some of the other names, Ryan Stanek, all that, they were able to contain Atlanta's bats. You were able to get maybe a few hits here and there. I believe it was one fielding error from Ozzy Albies. You had three up, three down against Odorizzi. You made a pitching change after a single from Dansby Swanson in the sixth. You then had Tyler Maton come in. Guess what? He was able to get out of a jam. Got a double off Rosario. After that, you got to see Stanton come in. Outside of a sacrifice fly to right field, not the worst. I will say that the worst play of the day was the single that Soler got, where Stanek tried to dive for the ball. Besides that, the bullpen did its job. But unfortunately for the Astros, having a good bullpen doesn't mean you always win. You have to be able to win with your starter. And the good news is that it's okay. You still have another game. You still have time to figure it out. But the Braves can hit with runners in scoring position. The Braves can hit power. The Braves can hit for contact. They're great plate discipline. A lot of them were going down swinging. Not a lot of strikeouts came by looking. A lot came from swinging. So they're on contact. They're just a little bit behind. When you look at this Braves team, from top to bottom, they feel complete. Maybe with the Astros, there's a little bit of, like, I wouldn't say completion there. There's something missing right now. Maybe it was the pitching. Maybe it was Valdez, who, again, you go back to game five. You go back to the final game in Boston, was dominant, saved the bullpen for game six, was able to go out, let the bullpen do its job, figure it out, comes up, eight strong innings of work to propel the Astros to a big-time victory to come back to Houston. Just inconsistent pitching. Like, that's really it. And that's a big deal I don't think enough people are talking about in this World Series, is that pitching is going to decide who is going to win this all. Keep in mind, you have, sorry about that, Luke Jackson, you have Will Smith, and you have Tyler Matzek. Tyler Matzek, who, by the way, is one of the best stories in baseball right now. They're a perfect 1-2-3 combination. Once you get to the sixth inning, if your starter can stay in long enough to the sixth inning, you're probably going to win the game if you're Atlanta. Because Luke Jackson gave up one hit, but got three strikeouts. Matzek, two strikeouts. Will Smith, walk, fielder's choice, ground out. Not a big strikeout guy, but puts the ball in play and puts the ball on the ground. That's the biggest thing you can take away. This 1-2-3 combination on the back end is so strong for Atlanta. Houston's got to learn to do what Atlanta did in game one moving forward. They got to score, they got to score early, and they got to score if runners in scoring position. That's the biggest thing. Houston last night had three hits for extra bases. Everything else was a single. Everything else was just quick bloopers. Oh, and by the way, they left, I believe it was 17 guys on base. They have 17 guys on base, and of those 17, they left 14 in scoring position. You got to be able to hit like that. You got to be able to hit when you have runners in play. You have to be able to hit when guys are sitting on second and third. In the first inning, they were able to open it up. They were able to go back and probably get this game tied at 2-2, swing momentum their way. What happens? Kyle Tucker flies out with two outs, bases loaded, momentum leaves. You can't let plays like that go to waste. You can't let good at-bats, good plays, like a great walk from Carlos Correa, go to waste. You have to be able to score. You have to be able to keep the ball in play. But before anything else, we got to talk about the confidence and more so the tenacity of Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton will not get the win because he did not go five innings. But let me explain why he did not go five innings. He only went 2.1. Because the guy got drilled in the ankle by the likes of Yuli Gurriel. Went back on the mound, pitched, got two more outs, came back in, pitched, got a third out, and then finally had to go and call the trainer to come over and take a look at his leg. Why? Oh, I don't know. Because Yuli Gurriel broke it. Yuli Gurriel broke this man's leg, and then after all of that, the man still pitched three innings. Let's just go ahead and put this into perspective. The guy pitched three more at-bats, and he also had a half inning to kind of sit on his leg and figure out, oh, something's not right. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go back out there anyways. Charlie Morton, who got his career rejuvenated with the Astros back in 2017, should have a 20-foot tall statue built of him outside of Minute Maid Park. Just for his contributions for what he did in 2017, especially in that late Game 7. He also should have his ballpark, his statue, 20 foot tall, built outside of Atlanta. Because of guess what? He was able to say, nah fam, I'm good. I got this for a quick minute. And was able to deliver two more strikeouts before finally saying, ah, something ain't right. That is cold-blooded. Do you guys remember the video of Mercedes Lewis breaking his leg? And he put his team on the back door. Anybody remember that video on Madden where you see him break his leg and he's trying to hobble his way into the end zone? That is Charlie Morton 2.0 trying to get back on the mound and close things out for Atlanta. You got to give a lot of credit to the Braves for him to be able to come back out and use just whatever little bit of drive he had left to make sure he ended the play. He ended the inning. He got his team in the right position to win. Now Atlanta takes a 1-0 lead going into tonight's game. It's going to be really interesting to see how Dusty Baker and this lineup recover to make sure that they don't go head to the ATL down 0-2. Speaking of being down, why is Mike Tomlin so mad about being down at the USC job? We'll talk about that next right here on Just Saying It.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They're close, convenient, and known for guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. So what's interesting to me is that USC is a premier job in college football. I think everybody would admit that it's one of the better jobs in college football. Now, will I say it is one of the best jobs right now? No, because if you still have a little bit of rebuilding to do, and that's been a problem since the Pete Carroll days. Even Clay Helton in his best season was not able to go to the college football playoff. He just went to a New Year's Six bowl game, and the reason he went wasn't because USC was great. It was because Washington was playing in the college football playoff that year. So he only went to represent the team in the Rose Bowl, I mean the conference in the Rose Bowl, because of the other team that was better than him was able to go and fight for a national championship. So that, let's get that out of the way real fast. The team has been rebuilding since Pete Carroll. But what's interesting to me is how Mike Tomlin got rumored into being a potential candidate for the job. A candidate, not a front runner, not offered the position, a candidate. You know who else is a candidate for the job? I'm a candidate for the job. Michael Hernandez on the other side of the booth is a candidate for the job. You out there are a candidate for the job. But here's how most of us would probably answer the question. You know what? I'm not really interested. Maybe I'll probably listen to offers. But right now, not the time. If I was a head coach, my answer would probably be, guys, I'm worried about playing in this game right now. The offseason, there's always going to be some type of speculation. People are always going to have their rumors. Doesn't mean it's always true. Mike Tomlin decided to take it a little bit further than that.
Guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check. Thank you. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? Anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
So what I love about that quote is two things. One, gets right to the point. Straight up, never say never, never. Not a big enough booster with a check. And here's why that's kind of funny. Because if you look at what Nick Saban's getting paid, you look at what Jimbo Fisher's getting paid, what Dabo Sweeney's getting paid. To me, having that NFL background and experience and also being a winner, never having a losing season, been in Pittsburgh for 15 years. Let's get that straight. 15 years. Mike Tomlin's been in Pittsburgh. Never had a losing season. He's had a couple 500 seasons, but he's never had a below 500 season. You don't think that that's going to sell to a recruit? Hey, come play for me. Never lost. Never been below 500. Mom's going to love that. Dad's going to love that. NIL deals are going to love that. But at the end of the day, you got to remember, the Pittsburgh Steelers are an organization that does not fire its head coach. Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin. Those have been the coaches for the Steelers for the last 40 years. That's how long they keep their coaches. Since I've been alive, I believe I've only seen three head coaches in their lifetime. And I'm pretty sure Chuck Knoll was on his way out when I was born. That's how long of coaches Bill Cowher stays. That's how long Mike Tomlin stays. He's not interested. But what was funny about that, and I totally understand, is ask Andy Reid this question. Ask Sean Payton this question. Ask Sean McVay this question. Do you want to know why he singled out those two coaches more than anyone else? Because they've been in the league just as long as he has. They've been in the league and been successful just as long as he has. But because the Pittsburgh Steelers are struggling right now, and because of you know that also Sean Payton is more likely to retire than go anywhere else, and Andy Reid is more likely to retire than go back to college, they feel like because Pittsburgh is struggling, he is not getting the same respect. And I totally get it. You look top to bottom. Pittsburgh has been to two Super Bowls. Andy Reid, been to two Super Bowls. Since Tomlin came into the league. New Orleans Saints, been to one Super Bowl. Won it one time. Been a good playoff team. Haven't been able to return to the postseason. So everyone's sitting here and going, oh, well, you know, Pittsburgh's starting to fall off a cliff. They're starting to really not show consistency. Well, where's New Orleans been consistently? They've either been out of the playoff picture altogether. They've actually had sub-500 seasons underneath Sean Payton. You know who's never had a sub-500 season? Mike Tomlin, with terrible rosters, with average play from players. Never had a sub-500 season. Oh, yeah, Andy Reid. Everyone wants to talk about him, how he works off a bye, all of his coaching assistant tree. It took him all the way until 2019, but since 2020 to go to the Super Bowl. And he almost lost that Super Bowl, if not for an errant throw from Jimmy Garoppolo to Emmanuel Sanders and a surging fourth quarter from Patrick Mahomes. You lose that Super Bowl. And you lose that Super Bowl if Damian Williams and I can't believe I'm blanking on the other guy's name. The other running back don't have breakout games for you. You lose that Super Bowl. And then you lose the other one to Tom Brady, who's ageless wonder, tearing it up down in Tampa Bay. The reason why Mike Tomlin's upset about this, and it makes total sense, is because of you're putting Sean Payton, you're putting Sean McVay, Andy Reid, Sean McDermott on this pedestal of these coup de grace coaches, these stellar top-tier names. And he wants to be included in that. He should be. He absolutely should. 10 playoff appearances. On top of that, you also have 8 division titles. They've also won in the postseason and never been below 500. Doesn't even have 100 losses yet in 15 years. 15 years in the NFL does not have 100 losses. And you're not asking those questions to other coaches who are in that same pedigree, that same background, that same tenure with their teams as long as he has. I understand why he's upset. But at the end of the day, I also look at this. USC's not a bad job. Mike, just take a chill pill. It's all good, baby. It's all fine. Everything has its reason. You could have just said no, but instead, you gave us the quote of a lifetime. I at least got to give him that. Straight to the point. Does not, no-nonsense kind of guy. Fits exactly what Pittsburgh wants. Just from that, honestly, that press conference alone, I would have probably written him a blank check if I was the Rooney family, saying, yeah, you're not going anywhere, bud. We're gonna make sure that you're paid because if you truly represent Pittsburgh. So what's funny is on the other side of this conversation, USC's former head coach, Pete Carroll, is now being under question for his work in Seattle. You're starting to see Seattle unravel this season. They're playing inconsistent. The offense coordinator, Shane Waldron, is not working out. And the biggest question that I had was Pete Carroll, in a loss to the Saints, never changed his game plan. Here's why. Because he doesn't trust Geno Smith. He only trusts Russell Wilson. And he had this to say about Russell Wilson when asked earlier about what he thinks his career would be without number 3.
Let's say it this way. I've been here a long time, and if we didn't have Russell, I probably wouldn't have been here a long time. Because think of all the magic that he's created in the years. He's got numbers and stats and fourth quarter, this is and that's and all that stuff. You know, one of the winningest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. And it'll be really fun when he comes back and plays football again for us.
You got to realize that basically is a sign of John Schneider. If Russell Wilson wants out, then you got to fire Pete Carroll. Because at the end of the day, Pete Carroll was made by Russell Wilson. Don't get that twisted. It wasn't on the flip side. Now that he's hurt, you're starting to see Pete Carroll unravel. That's a big plus for Russell Wilson. Let's go!
Just Saying It continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Time to find out what Cole's buying.
You bought it.
That's right, I bought it.
And selling.
Sell, 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 sell.
In the world of sports.
Well,
What are we waiting for?
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson with Buy or Sell.
So buy or sell usually is about some of the trending topics in the world of college football or the NFL, and I have one of the bigger trending topics right now. That is the Oklahoma Sooners, who somehow are ranked inside the top four despite nearly falling flat on their face to Kansas. Kansas. I will repeat that one more time. Kansas, a program that in the last decade has 18 total wins. 18 wins. Yeah, that's a problem. So, Kansas almost gets the upset. Oklahoma doesn't punish. They move down to one spot. If the college football playoff was to begin today, they would be the number four seed. So we know that they would 100% get blown out by Georgia, and everybody would get blown out by Georgia, in my opinion, right now. But would they get blown out by the other teams who were in the running for a college football playoff berth? Let's go ahead and play buy or sell on do I think Oklahoma could sustain winning against one of these teams. Here we go.
Ohio State.
I completely buy that Ohio State would kick their butt. Not even close. Ohio State has been one of the more consistent teams in the realm of college football since losing in week two to Oregon. They are playing at a such high level from top to bottom. That means Travion Henderson, the new running back, has been elite. C.J. Stroud is playing so dang well. And I don't think enough people are giving him credit. He has come on completely. Let me give you an stat real fast on what C.J. Stroud has done. We talk about Caleb Williams and how, you know, star-spangled awesome he has been. In his last three starts, he has a 14-touchdown-to-0-interception ratio. And by the way, the secondary that has been putrid hasn't allowed more than 17 points per game. This is a brand new feel Ohio State team. They actually feel like they are the true contenders once again to make the postseason. I know it was very hard on them at the start of the year. And guess what? I had every right to be. But if you're going to tell me in a 10-game situation, Oregon, Ohio State, neutral site, I would pick Ohio State to win more times. Probably seven times they would win. Oregon maybe wins three. I think they would beat Oklahoma maybe nine times. Oklahoma would maybe find a way to win once easily. I buy that Ohio State would beat up on Oklahoma.
Wake Forest.
Ooh, I sell. And that's nothing against Wake Forest. I got to give a lot of credit. We're actually going to talk about Wake Forest in a little bit, so I don't want to go that much into detail. But Wake Forest is not a bad team. They're just a really overrated team, I think, in the national spotlight. Probably a team that somehow falls just outside the top 10, which is where they belong at 7-0. But they play in the ACC. There has not been a lot of great competition in the ACC this year. And they've had some close games. They really have. Close one against Louisville. Had to go to overtime against Syracuse. I would love to see how they close out the season against Duke, North Carolina, NC State. Teams like that. Sam Hartman's done a good job. Dave Clawson's done a good job. It feels like there could be a very good shot to go undefeated into the ACC championship in Charlotte later at the end of the year. But Oklahoma, I think at least offensively, can go pound for pound with their defense. I think defensively, they can make enough plays in the pass rush with Nick Benito to pressure Hartman into making some mistakes. I don't think their run, the Demon Deacons' run defense is all that stellar overall. So I would at least give Oklahoma that. I think that they would be able to win maybe a close one, closer like a touchdown, 10 points, but they would be able to beat Wake Forest.
Cincinnati.
Ah, man, that's... Because, like, Cincinnati is a good team. They really are a good team. You know what? Yeah, I buy. I buy that Cincinnati would be able to beat Oklahoma. Right now, I do. Because if I think that Desmond Ridder is playing out of his mind, I think that you understand that he wants this so bad for the school and for the organization. They've been able to win a lot of games. And I get it. They played a really close one against Navy. They played at Annapolis. Maybe that played a big factor into it. But they are sitting at 7-0. They've done a really good job moving the ball on the ground. Jerome Ford, I don't think, is getting enough respect. He's averaging 6.8 yards per carry and has 13 touchdowns. The run defense and really the secondary of Oklahoma has been the biggest problem this season, is that the secondary cannot stay healthy. They're playing a lot of younger names. So if you get past that first and second level of defense to where safeties and cornerbacks are going to have to make tackles, you're going to have some trouble bringing down a 5'11", 220-pound bowling ball that somehow has great agility in the open space. So I like the defense of what you've seen from Cincinnati. I like what you've seen from the run game on the ground. I think Desmond Ridder's doing enough to get by. I'd like to see him throw a few more touchdowns per game. But overall, Caleb Williams may be able to score in this team. I just think that when you look at how they move the ball in the red zone, Cincinnati can win this game outright easily.
Oregon.
I will sell that one for now. It's nothing against Oregon. I just don't trust Anthony Brown. I really just don't. That is my biggest concern. Anthony Brown's inconsistency as a starting quarterback does give me a little bit of ease. Again, you look at how they played against UCLA, and I'm not here to say that UCLA is a bad team. I actually think that UCLA at one point was showing that they were a top 10 team, and they have three losses on the year. One of them was an ugly one. The other two actually made a little bit of sense. But Anthony Brown against UCLA threw two interceptions. Now, here's the good news. You probably could have Kayvon Thibodeau go rush, bull rush that offensive line that is horrendous for Oklahoma and put Caleb Williams in a coma. I mean, honestly. And that's not me, you know, ill-wishing the kid. That's me being legit. There has not been an offensive lineman this season in the Pac-12. But again, it's the Pac-12, so give it tit for tat. You know, let's just go ahead and put that out there. Has been able to stop Kayvon Thibodeau from adding pressure to its backfield. So I will give him that. I just think that go pound for pound, the defensive line of Oregon outside of Thibodeau isn't that strong. The tackling has been inconsistent, and the offense for Oregon just is not there. And especially when you lose your starting running back, the guy who played such a big role in helping you beat Ohio State, those are things that definitely factor into probably you not being able to beat Oklahoma.
Michigan State.
I sell that one. I don't know if right now Michigan State would be able to beat up on Oklahoma. It's not that I don't trust Michigan State. I love what Mel Tucker's done, and I love that Mel Tucker was able to go into the transfer portal, add 14 capable starters or key contributors to this roster to make this a quick turnaround. But is Sparty legit, or have they played nobody? Keep in mind they have one top 25 win, and that win was over Miami. A Miami team that is looking to possibly fire Manny Diaz for having been insubordinate and inconsistent as a play caller, losing games late. They were barely able to beat Indiana. They played down to the wire against, say, a Rutgers team. They weren't able to really extend their lead there. They actually went toe for toe with Western Kentucky. And I get it. Billy Zappe is having a really good year for the Hilltoppers. That, to me, just isn't enough. Michigan State, you know, you got games against Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State to close out the year. If you're able to win those games, maybe I'll give you a little bit more leniency, but I feel like if you're able to slow down Kenneth Walker and force the pass from the likes of Peyton Thorne, you're probably going to be able to maybe get a win. I actually like Oklahoma to win this series.
Michigan.
Ooh, you know what? This is going to be a shocker, but I am actually going to say Michigan would be able to get this win. And here's the main reason. They're able to move the ball on the ground. They've done a fantastic job this season being able to establish a run game. Michigan ranks number 6 in the country on the ground rushing. They're averaging over 253 yards per game. I think they're number 2 in the country in rushing touchdowns at 25. And they're averaging 6.5 yards per play rushing the football on the ground. These are like numbers that you see from like Air Force and Army and Navy, schools that are only primary rushing schools. So I look at all that, I put that in consideration. Even though I don't trust Cade McNamara as a quarterback just yet, I do think that Michigan is playing good enough defensively. They're able to establish a really good pass rush with Aiden Hutchinson coming off the corner. And I think that with the rushing attack, going up against this second and third team level defenses, if you get in the open field, you're going to be able to score. I'd like actually Michigan to win this series. I would, 100%.
Ole Miss.
I like Ole Miss. I 100% buy that. The reality is that when you look at how everyone's talking about Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC, where would I rank Oklahoma among SEC schools? I would probably say that they are right in the middle. They're definitely a top 6 or 7 school, but they're not much higher than that. Like, you could make a valid argument that Texas A&M is playing more consistent. You could make a valid argument that Kentucky is playing better, that Ole Miss is playing better. And Ole Miss, they're another team. Everyone talks about how it's a pass-oriented offense for Jeff Levy and Lane Kiffin. Guys, they established the run to establish the pass. That's how they use the ball. Jerrion Ealy is a phenomenal running back that does not get enough credit. I mean, he really doesn't because of he's been playing a limited role, but you have four running backs averaging over 5 yards per carry. And each of them have at least 3 touchdowns on the year. Meanwhile, you have a mobile quarterback in Matt Corral, who also moves the ball very well on the ground. He actually leads the team in rushing yards, and they have a dangerous passing attack. 67.6 completion rating, a passer rating of 168.2 on the year, 15 touchdowns, 1 turnover, 1 for Corral. I do like this matchup, especially with a weaker secondary. Ole Miss easily takes the cake.
SMU.
I think that's funny. I'll sell that because I do think that SMU is playing great football. Yeah, they're undefeated, but they're still not playing at a high-end level. They're one of these teams that's kind of like right in the middle tier. Tanner Mordecai, though, having him be able to beat up on both Caleb Williams and Spencer Rattler after being the backup for years in Norman would be hysterical. He leads the country in passing touchdowns with 29. I think he's number one or number two in passer rating at 167.6. I do like Ulysses Bentley. I do like Trey Siggers. I do think that they're able to move the ball very, very well on the ground. They're averaging 5.1 yards per play. But defensively, they've had some struggles. They've had some inconsistencies. I think that you could look at this, how Caleb Williams would be able to pass with Michael Woods, with Marvin Mims, with Jordan Hazelwood. Being able to establish the passing game, especially in the red zone, they probably win by 2 touchdowns. I would actually give this one to Oklahoma.
Iowa.
I sell, but it's a hard sell because Iowa's defense still is legit. You got to remember, this is one of the best teams when it comes to a turnover ratio. They're still one of the more productive teams in takeaways. I think that they rank number 2 now in takeaways on the year. This is still one of the Big Ten's best defenses, but their offense is inept. I mean, their offense is so horrendously bad, especially at the quarterback position, that's hard for me to trust Iowa. It's hard for me to say that Iowa is going to be able to beat up on anybody, especially when Purdue brings you down by halftime and you're unable to recover. That's been a big problem. You look at what Sean Petra does as a passer. He's very, very, Spencer Petras, my bad. He's very limited. They do have a good rushing attack. I think that Oklahoma still has a good rushing attack. Kennedy Brooks and Eric Gray can get the job done. That's not enough of an excuse. That's not enough to get by. So Iowa, I think, would lose this game.
Kentucky.
I think Kentucky wins this game. Absolutely. Liam Cohen has done such a good job developing the passing attack inside of Lexington. It's very hard for me to say that Kentucky right now is not a top 10 team in college football. They're playing like one. They're absolutely showing week in and week out that they belong inside that conversation of potentially being a New Year's Six Bowl team. And you take away a 30-13 loss against Georgia, guess what? They're undefeated going into the final month of the season with games against Mississippi State, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Louisville. They could easily be a 12-0 team. I actually do expect them to be 11-1. And the way that they run the ball, how well they are efficient moving the ball on the ground, and how they trust the pass with Will Levis, and defensively, how they're able to take away big-time plays in coverage. Yeah, I think you'd be a limited Caleb Williams, and I definitely think that this Wildcat defense would be able to shut down this offense. Kentucky wins, I'd go 8 out of 10 matchups.
And Notre Dame.
I sell. I do it. Notre Dame's overrated. You lost to a non-Power 5 Cincinnati team. I will give credit. Cincinnati has been playing better. I will say that Notre Dame has been finishing games. You got to give a lot of credit there since that loss. But they don't really have a promising win on the schedule. You know, you look at what the likes of Florida State has been this year. You look at what the likes of Wisconsin has been this year. None of them have been really that productive. Their biggest win came against USC, and USC fired their head coach. There's not been a big prominent win. There's not going to be a big prominent win. They're not going to have a top 25 win on their roster. I think it's a lot closer, probably a touchdown differential, but Notre Dame loses this game. Oklahoma wins it. So really about three or four teams that were in the college football playoff conversation, I think Oklahoma could actually beat. Everyone else, they would get curb stomped by. They have it. Buy or sell right here on Just Saying It.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Well, they were a team that people were paying close attention to this offseason in the NBA, and they are looking like a legitimate contender. The Chicago Bulls improved to 4-0 Monday night with an 111-108 victory over the Toronto Raptors at the Scotiabank Arena, making Chicago the last unbeaten team in the Eastern Conference. This is the best start to a Bulls season since 1996-97 season when Michael Jordan was still playing. The Bulls right now are on fire. They have wins. They have two wins of over 110 points. They have two closer wins against Detroit twice, but they are looking like a legit team. And DeMar DeRozan says even though they have to make sure that they stay on a competitive path, they could be dangerous in 2021.
I mean, nothing. Got a long way to go. Got a lot more to clean up, to learn. It's a long season, man. You know, it's great, but we got a lot more basketball to go. You know, we got to move on to the next game. We can't carry this record like, you know, it's some type of badge of honor. We got to understand the next game is going to be even harder.
They're starting to play really consistent ball. They're averaging, 47 points from the field goal range. They're averaging 42 points from behind the arc. They don't have that many penalties. They're actually shooting really well at the free throw line as well. The team average of 87.4%. And again, the Bulls being good at basketball is good for the NBA. The Bulls are a historic franchise that have been looking to climb out of the cellar for a hot minute. Adding in names like Lonzo Ball, adding in Alex Caruso, DeMar DeRozan, all of these players in the offseason really has benefited Chicago. They could be a dangerous team in 2021.